Hi friends. I talk a lot about systems thinking on this podcast and thought I'd share one of the most potent actions you can take if you feel moved to be a different kind of leader for the 21st century. At Small Giants Academy, we developed our answer to the traditional MBA. We call it the MBE, a Mastery of Business and Empathy. The MBE is a truly groundbreaking program which equips leaders with the tools, strategies, networks, and philosophies to lead with purpose in these troubled times. Applications are open now for 2025, so head to smallgiants.com.au/MBE to learn more and sign up.
All property development you see going on anywhere in the world today is taking from the earth more than what it can sustain. So all property development is contributing to the problem we have at hand.
Hi, I'm Barry, and this is the Wisdom in Action podcast, brought to you by the Small Giants Academy. Welcome to this episode with Rasmus Norgaard. Rasmus was a co-founder and board member of NREP, the largest real estate fund manager in the Nordic countries, where he served as CIO for 13 years. He founded the company Home.Earth with an aim to create inclusive and livable homes and communities that focus on sustainability and quality of life. He's been working with Kate Raworth of Donut Economics fame on developing systems for putting the property world into her donut model. And the donut asks the question, can we live in the sweet spot between the planetary boundaries and social foundations? So there is a kind of safe and just space for humanity to exist as a design function, as a systems design kind of model. And Rasmus has taken that model and applied it to property. That might sound really boring and weird, but I am in a lot of these spaces. I am a property developer. I am an impact investor. I'm in the circular economy invested, and I'm in regenerative ag. I do so many of these things, and you don't come across a Rasmus Norgaard very often. He has gone against the grain to do what he does and create these models. And we need the models. We need more brave, innovative people putting themselves out there. If you're an investor, if you're in the property sector, or if you're just a human that lives in a house or an apartment, you're going to want to hear this conversation. Hi, Rasmus. It's so nice to see you. I didn't realize how much I'd missed you. It's been too long.
It has been too long.
Goodness, lifetimes have passed since we met on our Small Giants Impact Safari in Scandinavia. So if we can come back just a little bit, I know you're Danish, so you guys are different. And why we came all that way with people on the Impact Safari was to try to understand what is so different about the Nordic countries, because obviously in the system, the built environment plays an enormous part, not only in emissions, but in telling us the story of how we're going to live on this planet within one planet's resources. So was it an aha moment for you? Did you have an awakening? How? Give us the secret sauce.
Thanks. Yeah, so let me try and bring you on that, because it's also very much a personal journey. I don't think there was one aha moment, but I think, call it our awareness on the journey with Urban Partners grew over the years. I was the CIO there for more than 13 years, or chief investment officer, and kind of reached the limits of my managerial capabilities and stepped out of the day-to-day management and embarked more on, call it urban development as a theme. And what I like about kind of urban development thinking is that it's pretty holistic. For me, I connected very strongly to many of the social dimensions of urban development, inequality as a theme. And I think there are few places where inequality is more visible than in how people live. It's one of the areas where I think the property industry fails to really take responsibility. And whether we like it or not, if we want to be in an industry where we are catering to people, then I think we do have a social responsibility. Housing is a human right. And I think you say in property development, you need to give something back. So I was longing personally for moving to, call it, a more a holistic perspective on how we do property development. And I think in my mind, that also requires that we rethink business design. The reason for saying that is I think the way the property industry works today, it's a fairly fragmented industry with a lot of short-term interests. And I think you need to be able to take kind of a holistic, integrated perspective and a very long-term perspective to set up Home.Earth. And with Home.Earth, it's real estate and urban development company trying to build both inclusive and sustainable homes. You could put it as simply as that. But I think it's also very much based on a different design of business. So for me, there's an element of financial systems change, which is underlying all of this. I think we won't achieve the outcomes that we hope to achieve unless we also see financial systems change.
This is not a greenwashing conversation. This is really the edge of the wedge work that you're doing. And what do you mean when you say the financial system needs to change?
I think we've set up the financial system, and especially over the last 50, 60 years, that's the direction it has taken, where focus is on growth and profit, ultimately. And even our societies, I mean, are targeting GDP growth. That's kind of the success we're driving towards. And Australia and Denmark and many other Western countries, you see, have reached kind of a standard of living where I think we could aim higher than just economic growth. I mean, we're pretty high up in the Maslow pyramid already. In my perspective, we need to move to more of a values-based financial system where we're targeting positive outcomes on a number of different dimensions, whether that would be sustainability, climate, ecosystems, and so on, or all the social dimensions. But as a society, why do we target GDP growth when you could target health, better education, all those types of things? And I think we need to move to, whether it's a triple bottom line mindset, we've in Home.Earth call it people, planet, and profit, but it's probably multidimensional. Unless we manage to, as a society, as business, as investors, as entrepreneurs, to kind of move to a different set of values in terms of what we see as positive outcomes for what we do, then I think we will struggle to have the change that we all aspire for.
You've gone from traditional property development, property funds management, into Home.Earth. What is Home.Earth? Why did you set it up? What are you trying to solve?
You could think of it as simply as a real estate company. So it's a company that will develop buildings with an ambition to own and operate them in perpetuity. And this sounds fairly simple, but it's very, very different to how the industry works today. I mean, typically you will, what I call the fragmented value chain, you will have a developer, a landowner that goes to an architect and have them draw up a project. And then you go to an engineer to prepare it for construction. And then you have a contractor. And then the developer, once it's completed, will sell it and somebody else will take it over. But it just means that you have lots of different kind of people taking ownership of each part of what goes on there. And all of them, I think, have good intentions, but often they end up fighting. And kind of the long-term interests are often not in focus up front. So for me, it's a big part of what needs to happen is that we need to take more of a life cycle perspective on property development. And that's what we do. And we can do that because we set up the business with an evergreen perspective. So that's part of what we do. Then in terms of how do you deliver on a triple bottom line? And we were kind of struggling with that. We've called it people, planet, and profit positive homes. And how do you operationalize that? And we came up with donut economics as the best framework for that. I mean, there are all kinds of different frameworks, but I think donut has this strength. It's intuitive. It's simple for people to comprehend and kind of sets limits in the sense that as long as we live up to a social foundation for all people and live within the means of the one planet we do have, then in principle, we can, if you want to take a traditional financial perspective, we can profit maximize within those limits. So we actually came out with a manual called Donut for Urban Development, where we've, for instance, quantified in terms of climate impact, what does it mean? When are we within the planetary boundaries when we develop property? So try to make it very tangible most of the industry still works off certifications like LEED or BREEAM and so on, but it's a relative measure. It says nothing about when we arrive at the planetary boundaries.
So you're talking about the industry standard measurements for best practice, best in the world, sustainability metrics, for example, or energy consumption metrics. Can you explain for people listening what that means, that they're relative? Relative to what?
Well, call it they're relative to planetary health. It's a certification. There's nothing bad about them. I mean, it's great because for a lot of people, where do you start? Provides a framework and a methodology for people to think about how to create sustainable property. You have certifications in many other industries as well. So there's nothing bad about it. I think what we all just need to realize is that we need to put them in the context of the planetary boundaries to understand how close are we to where we need to get to. At least in the case of Denmark, we use a certification called GGNB, which is like a green building standard. And when we quantify that, it just shows that if you develop to a gold standard, you're still using resources equivalent to 10 planets, more than 10 planets. So the certifications is a starting point.
We know that we're working to a pretty tight timeline to repair those ecological and social foundations before there's no going back, whatever that means, before we're kind of looking at the other side of pretty apocalyptic outcomes. Can you explain what you mean when you say the gold standard takes 10 planets?
I think what we need to realize as a global population is that we're taking more from the earth than what it can sustain. And I've sometimes tried to explain this by talking to people and saying, imagine that you were living on one field. All your life and everything you're doing would need to take place within that field. I think all of us would understand that there was probably a limit to how many people could be within that field. I.e., if you had to grow all your food there, you had to get all your materials there, it needed to support the livestock you had and other animals and so on, you couldn't keep putting more people into that system. You couldn't keep extracting more energy, more materials and so on from that system. If it's something people can see, like a simple field, then everyone understands and they start thinking, oh, could we be 4 people or 6 people or 10 people? But with the planet, given that it's so big, we don't understand it. But what we need to consider is that we're 8 billion people today. We're growing towards 11 billion. 1% of the planet's land use is cities and roads, etc. 50% is our food systems. So we use 50% of all land for producing food for humans. And it just means that we're starting to live beyond the means of what the planet can sustain. And when I say we use 10 planets for a property development, it means we're taking 10 times as many resources for property development as what the planet can sustain. It fundamentally also means that all property development you see going on anywhere in the world today is taking from the earth more than what it can sustain. So all property development is contributing to the problem we have at hand. And we need, obviously, to get to a point where we are regenerating, and we're very far away from that.
You've done this really big piece of work, and this concept of how many planets does it take to build a building. Kate Raworth's proposition with the donut was, can we stretch our imagination from the original term for economics, which was home management? Can we stretch our moral, creative, and total imagination as a planetary collective to the planet itself? Can we take ourselves and our imagination that far? And people are very overwhelmed at the moment. People's cognitive sort of ceiling is reached. And you're saying, hey, just so we're clear, we are stretching all the boundaries. We're outside the safe zone on everything. You've done this next bit of work, not only identifying that a regular property development is 10 planets, you've tracked where we can go and how we can get out of this mess. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it gets a little bit technical, but I'll try and do it as simple as I can. So we've been working with biogenic materials and so on and so forth to get the footprint down of the first building as much as we can. And we've taken that to roughly, if you look at it on a like-for-like basis, to 5 planets.
What's a biogenic material?
Let's call it natural materials. Materials originating from wood, hemp, insulation, all those types of things. But when you talk about planetary boundaries, and we've talked about 8 billion people before, it's actually on a per capita basis. So how much space we each use for living also goes into the equation. So when I said 10 planets before, that's based on how much space we use per person in Denmark. And Australia probably wouldn't be so different, I would imagine, to Denmark. But of course, if you go to Africa, they use a lot less space per person than we do. So in that sense, they use less planets than we do, and we know that. And the scary trend is that everywhere in the world, at least in the Western world, all of us are using increasing amounts of space per person. It's not only kind of the car itself, it's also how many people we put into the car that matters. And we need to have that discussion, because I think with growing wealth that we've seen, people, you say, want bigger and bigger living spaces, but this is also one of the problems. We use more and more materials. Then I think circularity becomes another element here. Kind of when you calculate your carbon footprint, then for instance, in the case of wood, this is just a technical thing, but it assumes that you will burn the wood at the end of life, and that leaves a lot of footprint. And historically, obviously, we haven't been good at circularity.
After I left your presentation, I just was walking around thinking about all the buildings and how could we, in a circular mindset, in a circular economy, you could strip the whole building down and reuse every bit of material in a new build. Like, that's the ultimate, isn't it? Not only that the materials are natural, not only that the materials are then new emergent materials that can suck in carbon and do all the good things and grow plants and feed us and buildings that are alive with us, but that you could disassemble those buildings and build the next building. I was even reading this morning about a building in Melbourne that's 12 years old, apartments, and a council has approved to tear them down to build a new apartment building. That's 12 years. All that concrete, all that aluminium, all that glass, how can we just, we're going to have to stop.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, if we start seeing buildings that are at the end of their life as a resource bank rather than as a cost to demolish, then there's a lot of potential in that. But typically, both you need to design buildings for disassembly. So if we take this in already in the design phase, we can design them in a way that they are easy to disassemble. And we need typically also a digital twin of the building. So you need to know what's in it. You need to know how it's put together. You need to know what happened through the lifetime of the building. And typically neither of this happens. And if it makes sense, it goes back to what I called a fragmented value chain, in the sense that a contractor, and it's not because the contractor is bad, but they just want to build the building on cost, on time, and so on. And you say, so there's not the incentives to create a digital twin, because the long-term owners, the owners that will be there at the time it needs to be disassembled, they have no stake in the development, typically. As one example, so important to set up businesses that can work across all those dimensions or take as responsibility already from the development stage. So we are creating digital twins of the projects we are doing. And in our first project, we have roughly a 70% circularity rate, i.e. meaning that we believe we can reuse 70% of the materials. And we will keep pushing that up. I think we can get higher. Foundations, if you need to do concrete foundations, they are hard to reuse one-to-one. So you'll never get to 100, but you can get much, much higher. And today, typically when you demolish buildings, you reuse very little, or at least you downcycle it. You may crush concrete and it goes into landfill. So you will downcycle it. I mean, there's tons of potential for doing this a lot better, but it means we need to take responsibility for that upfront. Or the regulators could actually introduce some of this. And it would be good for the long term if they required the industry to do some of these things. Like you need certifications, for instance, or you need to meet a certain energy standard. Then you could also say there needs to be a digital twin of the building.
How long does it take on your chart to get to under one planet?
If we allow ourselves to assume that we recycle the materials we have in the building today at the end of life, then we are almost there already. That's not how your carbon accounting typically works, as I mentioned. You need to burn it. For us to be there with today, it both assumes that we push down the footprint. We have done that, so that we have achieved. It assumes that people live in smaller spaces, and we've designed the units for that. And then it assumes kind of that we recycle materials at the end of life. Even if people don't need to live in smaller spaces, I still believe we can get there over the next 5 or 6 years, actually. So it is doable. We kind of know a lot of what's ahead of us in terms of taking that journey. But some of the technologies, for instance, you can put carbon capture on your ventilation systems. It's an efficient place to capture carbon because you get the carbon in a more concentrated format. But that technology is not advanced enough. And this is probably one of the more complex things. A lot of other things are just being able also to produce materials and do it at scale and get your regulators to approve that new materials are fire resistant and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of regulation in this industry that also becomes preventive for some of the things we need to do. But I think over the next 5-6 years, I would expect we get very close to it, even with the same space per person as we have today.
People might be listening to this and go, oh, you know, they can do that in Denmark. It's easy for the Danes because everything there is so green and they're so progressive and it's just basically shiny and awesome over there. But I know that's not been the case for you. I know that you really are a renegade. So I want to acknowledge it. It takes a huge amount of courage.
I think I would concur with you. It actually has been hard. I think mentally, actually, it hasn't been so hard for me. I kind of felt I had to do this.
Why, Rasmus? Like, no one in your position is doing that. That's what's fucking wrong with the world. People who have power and influence and agency and can actually pull this off are not doing it. So why was it imperative to you?
Well, I would concur that too little is happening. I think for me, it almost comes down to integrity and personal integrity. When you understand these things, and I'm constantly surprised how many people actually are starting to understand where we are, and still there's all this inaction. And I think there's something around people not connecting tomorrow with the long term. I mean, I think one of the biggest issues we have is that the crisis is not coming down on us more imminently than it is. But I think for me, given that I know kind of where we are, I also have built a position where I have a capability or an ability to actually do something. I think I would struggle to look my kids in the eyes both today, but even more so in 10 or 20 years if I didn't do anything, and also struggle to look other people in the eye. For me, it was not a difficult choice, but I feel actually the more success you've had, or the more awareness you have, or the more competences you have, I think also in a way the greater responsibility you have. A responsibility actually to try and use both the knowledge and the position and the network I have to try and see if I can be a small piece towards moving this industry towards a better place. Actually, doing it is really, really hard. But from a personal level, I think I would have struggled more if I didn't do it. Interestingly, I was in a board context and one person asked, so we are driving towards the edge of the cliff. And do you think we're about to turn, or do you think we stopped before, or we're just driving straight over it? Everyone in the board, and they are smart people, they said, we're driving over the edge of the cliff. I've been struggling a little bit with that because it became apparent to me that people see this and people kind of accept it. I feel I need to, I need to at least do something in the context of this to be able to look my kids in their eyes in 10 or 20 years when we are most likely, unfortunately, in a worse place than we are today.
It's really amazing to hear what you're saying because it does feel like this unbelievable apathy and silence and a giving up before we've even given it a go. And people who have power and agency are overwhelmed and out of their depth. And yeah, it's really scary to recognize that it takes 10 planets to build a building. That's really shit. And to know that that's happening every day all over the world, thousands of times over. But if not us, then who? And if not now, you wouldn't know that it's 5 years to get to a building that's built within one planet's boundaries. It's big what you're doing, and I hope it's incredibly successful and the rest of us can copy.
There's actually an YouTube clip called The Overview Effect, and it relates to the astronauts that first came into space. And what they noticed was, or what was recorded was, that they actually spent majority of the time looking back on Earth. So they came out into space, and you would think they would look at all everything else that goes out on out there, but they spent most of their time looking back on Earth. And they could see how fragile the atmosphere was. They could see how beautiful the planet was, and they can also see that there are no borders. And at a time now when you consider kind of all the conflicts that are within countries, between countries, and so on, I think we need to realize that with some of the challenges we're facing, we're all together. I mean, it doesn't depend on race or religion or what color you have or what country you live in, and so on. We're all in it together. I think you get kind of a sense of the collective when you watch that clip. So it's highly recommended for me.
Yeah, beautiful. Thanks for everything you do. I hope to see you and talk to you again very soon.
Me too, and thanks for everything you do.
I didn't know whether my conversation with Rasmus would fit in the arc of all the conversations that I'm having around systems thinking and people working on interventions and innovations in the world to pierce the veil of what's going on in the business as usual landscape. I feel both really inspired by Rasmus and really frustrated with the convincing and the cajoling and the hand-holding. I just want to say, can all the grown-ups please stand up? Put your money where your heart is. Invest in our kids' futures. That's my wish. That's my plea. And I hope you enjoyed listening to Rasmus talk about how many planets it takes to build one building. This was the Wisdom in Action podcast, brought to you by the Small Giants Academy. If you want to turn this wisdom into action, go to smallgiants.com.au for more information about the programs we run. We love hearing from you. So tell us what you think by leaving a rating and review on your favorite podcast app or email us at podcast@smallgiants.com.au. This podcast was produced by my friends at Audiocraft. Our theme music is Aquila by Monique DiMartina.